Today is Monday morning, where the second day of Slichus Vashkenazim, well into Slichus Vespartim. Once again, I request that anyone who is saying Slichus and coming late, bring your breakfast to class. It's Monday, the 26th of September. I want to say hello to all the wonderful people sitting in front of me and to the many thousands that are listening across the world. I just apologize as Sherry came back from being in the States and printed out all the emails for me. And I just apologize to all the people who would love to correspond with the Sheyurim. I'm only one human being and I have no secretarial help, basically. I teach for YU. Teaching for YU today is not a pleasure due to economic considerations. And I just apologize. But if you do send a question or a correction, if I've made a mistake, I'm the happiest person in the world to acknowledge I've made a mistake, and I will answer any question. Many times I'll just do it in Shia when I think it's something that affects the general public. Okay, with that being said, I want to get down to the nitty-gritty. And we're sailing in. Last week we spoke about Herzl and why Herzl. And I showed you, by the way, Morty and... you were sitting there last week, okay, you're confusing me. Charlie, okay, got it. Hexter. Charlie, anyone who wants a copy of my new book, it's available via Sherry. She's back and taking orders, and Olam Kaminago Olech. I also thank everyone. It was a very wonderful moment Tuesday night, a moment in time. I personally was very moved. Tova Lichtenstein introduced me, and we had a very big crowd, and I sailed right into Yosef HaTzadik Mendelovich, and I think for the people who were there Tuesday night, it's a night that you don't forget so soon. So I ani modela Kadosh Baruch Hu that we finally had a book launch in Jerusalem. Now, with Theodor Herzl, the point I made was that had he been a religious Jew, the Chiloniyim, I'm using contemporary terminology, would have totally dismissed him. The fact that God brought it about through Herzl was a miracle, because due to the fact that he was so distant from Yiddishkeit, everyone listened and everyone followed, and the greatest achievement since Churban Bayit is where we're sitting today. It is second to none in the annals of Torah history over the last 2,000 years. So for many decades, I said this on my own, but when Rakefet says it, you can laugh, you can dismiss it, you can negate it, you can abrogate it, you can maledict Rakefet with every word under the sun. But I showed you a medrash, and finding that medrash, and nishtaf avof in a medrash. Again, you fellas don't speak Yiddish, which is a great disadvantage, because if you don't speak Yiddish, Michael, you cannot receive the Torah properly. I've told you that more than once. I learned in Lakewood. In Lakewood, they told me the Rebbein Shlomo had karet with Moshe Rabbeinu in Yiddish. And the worst part is that I believed them, that the conversation was in Yiddish. So it's nishtaf avofana. How do you say that in English and Hebrew? It's forget it. It's nishtaf avofana medrash. But it's a medrash rabba. And I showed it to you last week. And whenever I tell that in a little dialogue, because I don't debate with people. I've learned in life, life is too precious to waste time on debating. But if you dialogue, so Haredim, they really are touched by it, because that puts them in a real corner. And it answers the question, why Herzl? Now, Michael, you bothered by anything? I see your eyes. No. Okay. No, so
the only thing I would add is that what made Herzl significant was he turned Zionism into a political movement.
Yeah, well, I made that point last week, that it's more than that, that why Herzl, not the great rabbis, because great rabbis do many, many things. There's a medical doctor sitting here. I can say testimony, he's a doctor, he's a husband, he has three little children. He's busy as can be. Herzl said goodbye to his wife, goodbye to his children. You saw the price he paid. And to paraphrase the Torah, and all he did was Zionism. 10 years, and he died of heart failure because he was getting nowhere. But he was the father of political Zionism. We have to move. We have to get. We have to do.
I'm sorry. And the Chada'am and Pinsker and Gordon, they were all intellectuals.
Nordau was, who was a medical doctor, by the way, he was more with Herzl. But the intellectuals, and led by Chada'am. And Chada'am, as I said last week for us, is a tragic figure. I don't want to minimize the fact that had a Chada'am, he was a gadol b'Torah. I mean, you have to know what the man knew, and he was mesadik gittin Ephraim at a young age. You know what that means, with gittin that were accepted. But you see, it's a Haredi mentality that when he said to his parents, I want to go to gymnasium, they called him over our dead bodies. And ultimately, they die, and about the age of 29, I believe it is, he starts gymnasium, goes on to become the controller of Vysotsky's tea, and he is really a good historical Jew, historical movement, you know what I'm talking about, good conservative Jew, very similar to Solomon Schechter's thinking, perhaps a little bit more radical than Solomon Schechter, but I have to tell you, in the Litvische Welt, all the great Rashi Yeshiva knew Chada'am by heart. They had to deal with it. Some of them battled him. Some of them swallowed him. But everyone was exposed to Ashi Ginsburg Chada'am. And on a personal level, he remained a Shomer Shabbos. I mean, that Bialik too was not Bechallel Shabbos, but Prahesia. They retained a great amount of tradition. Now, so Chada'am already believed in what we call cultural Zionism. There are many translations in Hebrew, exactly if it's Tzionit Tarbutit, etc. But what does cultural Zionism mean? Cultural Zionism means you have to prepare, as I explained last week, the people have to be prepared. You follow me, Daniel? You just can't hit them over the head and say, be a Zionist. You have to prepare them. You have to explain to them what it means and coming back and building a home and normalcy and returning and love of Israel, the centrality of Israel. And this was a Chada'am. Now, let me pick up exactly where I left off last week, and let me ask a logical question. Why did this become a machloket? Why did this become a machloket? After all, until today, we understand very well, you need both. Rabbeinu Shalom, this issue was debated. You have no idea how much was written and how much effort was put into it. And how many arguments with Russian jury. The tremendous debate when the Iron Curtain fell, for the first time, Russian jury had a chance to express itself as Jews. I need not tell you what's going on in Russia today. Chabad is all over the place. Every year, I would estimate, onto $100 million is poured into Russia by Torah organizations, mainly Chabad, Leib Levayev, George Roa. I know these people. You have no idea what tzaddikim they are. These are people blessed with unbelievable wealth, and they give unbelievable tzedakah. And I can tell you, a person like George Roa, I can tell you, Eitav Nemana. This is from B'nai Kehilat Yeshurun. I believe he's a Yeshiva College graduate, if I'm not mistaken. You can correct me if I'm wrong. He's from South America originally. And obviously Chabad must have picked him up at a young age because his first and overwhelming commitment is to Chabad. And George Roa, when he comes to Israel, he goes to the King David. His wife goes to the pool, right? What do you go to the King David for? To enjoy Olam Hazeh. He leaves the hotel, used to come to Shvut Ami, go into the Beis Medrash, and talk and learning with the Russian kids. And you could see the nachat he was getting to see Russian Balei Tshuva. Very unique individual. Leib Levayev, I don't have to tell you what these people have done. So now the question rises, why do we educate them? Why are we leaving them in Russia? Bring them to Israel. And there was a whole machloket. Do we take Jewish assets and throw it into Russia and build another gullus, or no, bring them to Israel? And the answer is you need both. To get Jews to come to Israel, they have to have Jewish commitment, Jewish knowledge, Jewish understanding. You need both. You're not going to get Olim 10 years from now if you don't develop a Jewish community, a yeshiva, a Talmud Torah, a synagogue, a rabbi outreach. You need both. And then we have to struggle with Aliyah. You don't get everyone to come in Aliyah. And nevertheless, with all our crying, with all our struggling, with all our anger, and I mean the word anger, because when you come in Aliyah, I always caution people the first time they go back, don't get hysterical. I remember the first time I went back, after I lived here 8 years, 1977, the government sent me. I was furious. I saw rabbis, I saw good Jews sitting in America, sitting in Forest Hills, sitting in Kew Gardens. I remember this whole group of rabbis asked me to lead the benching. And when I finished benching, I got up and I said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for the warm bracha you said about my hometown. And everyone looked at me. I said, what's going on? I'm talking to rabbis and rabbins in Suvenei Yerushalayim, Yeh HaKodesh, Ben Cheder V'Yameinu. And they don't even relate, you know, Mendap and Dap, Amen, etc. They don't realize. And you can't get upset, you can't get angry. But we have to influence. And take a look, with all our crying, with all our frustration, we have on to 6 million halachic Jews living al Admat HaKodesh. If anyone would have told me that this would be when I was your age, or told the Rav, when we told Rebbe, I have it in my book, in my work on the Rav, in the second volume, when they started telling him about what's going on in Russia, the Rav said, I can't believe it, it's a Kenish sign, it cannot be, you understand? The Rav said, I know communism, I lived under communism, but if it is true, the Rav said, it proves to me once again the strength of Amcha Beit Yisrael and Al HaNisim. That look how the Jew does not die out, that feeling remains there. So you need both. So if this is the case, I want to ask a simple question. Why did it become a major machloket? Why at the first Zionist convention, the second one, 1897, 1898, 1899, 1900, why did it become such a tremendous machloket? Ribbono shel Olam, you need both. Why the machloket? Why the battle? Why two different forces? Why votes? Why? And gentlemen, in this answer lies the dilemma that we face till this very second. And a minute before class, Danny Wolf asked me a question. It's exactly going back to this dilemma. My dear students, let me explain myself. Political Zionism is parav. It's neutral. We can all partake. It doesn't say anything. All it says, the Jews need a homeland. Well, we all agree. The Jews need a homeland. We read the Torah, Lech Lecha Miyatzchem V'Ameitachicha. All agree. Cultural Zionism immediately divides us. Whose culture? What culture? Rakefet is a big Zionist. He's not ashamed of it. Am I a Zionist? Absolutely not. I'm a Ben Torah. He meets Zion Tetzei Torah. Udvar Hashem, Yerushalayim. Lech lecha miyatzlecha mimolatcha mibeit neim. Which I dash and think. The order is not right. I don't have time now. But just think. Lech lecha miyatzlecha mimolatcha mibeit avicha. Tell me, Ephraim, when you left your parents' home to come in Aliyah, didn't you leave your parents' home first? Where do you leave first when you say goodbye?
My parents were in 92.
92, fine. What did you leave next? Lech lecha miyatzlecha molat. Then you left your molatet, the state. Where did you grow up? Toronto? What do you relate to as your childhood? Toronto.
Yeah.
I relate to New York. When I come to New York, I'm totally at home. No one has to meet me at the airport. No one has to take me anywhere. I know New York as well as anyone. Okay? I grew up there. That's molatetcha. Then when you get on the yellow plane and you take off, atzecha. The Torah has the exact opposite order. You think about it. There's a beautiful, and there's only one answer to that, and it's an absolutely true answer. That the hardest thing to leave, if you've had a happy childhood, and I hope you had a happy childhood, or the head shrink is, Ronan, if you become a psychiatrist, you're going to make a lot of money out of the guys who didn't have a happy childhood. Take my word for it. If you had a happy child, that's the hardest to leave. That mamish is the hardest. And Rakepet is the greatest proof in the world that rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, handed, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, surreptitious, malevolent, pushnak named Rakepet. What was the first thing he did this morning? Went to the New York Yankees to see what they did. The New York Yankees, that's what concerns you? But that's Beit Avicha. My father played sandlot ball with Hank Greenberg. Danny, you can't make that boast. Believe me. So you see, Zionism, wait a minute. So that's Rakefid Zionism. Torah, Zionism, Shabbos, Kashrut. My Torah, Charlie has everything. I can't just take Kashrut, Shabbos, Tarek Mishpacha, and throw away Eretz Yisrael. Now we'll ask Ehud Barak. Ehud, Mr. Barak, General Barak, call him what you wish. Mr. Barak, great-grandson of great Rabbanim. Great-grandfather was a Talmud Mufak, a Rabbi Yisrael Horowitz of Nevada, Karav Bork. Look it up in Trua Tamusa. Mr. Barak, are you a Zionist? Yes. What is your Zionism? My Zionism, the Jews need a homeland where no one will persecute them, where we can be normal like all the other nations, where we can have movies and television and pornography and everything that goes into the modern world. Yoni, sit close. We need, give him a chair. Boy, we ran out of chairs. I gotta make a shafiyan here that we ran out of chairs in the room. I once had to move the shir into the auditorium. The Hesper and Joe DiMaggio was given in the auditorium. So yes, Mr. Barak, what's your Zionism? My Zionism? Well, let me tell you a story about Mr. Barak's mother, a Rav Satachtek. How many of you know Yiddish? No? More, do you know Yiddish? You know that expression, a Rav Satachtek? Go and explain it to them. Go and explain. A rabbi's daughter. In Yiddish, it means that some rabbi's daughters have such a hatred for Yiddishkeit that when you mention Yiddishkeit, flames come out of their mouth and they say, Rakefet quoted that great genius rabbi in Los Angeles. Believe me, women were put in the cage. You heard my quote, Tuesday? You follow me, Danny? Das heißt Adam Satachta. So you should know about Barak's mother. Following the Yom Kippur War, we survived by miracles. I don't know how we survived until today. I was here already at the Yom Kippur War. 4 good years, I lost tens and tens of friends, acquaintances. Around the corner from us where we live, there was a Kohen from South Africa. He never came back. People who were in the absorption center never came back. 2 Madrichim of BMT, which was all of 4 years old, never came back. Well, it's beyond words what that ended, but you know, the Yom Kippur War broke Rav Amital. I told them Rav Amital was a Messianic Zionist after the Yom Kippur War. Wow. And I never let anyone criticize him. I said, when you bury, I think it was 8 students, we'll see how big a Zionist you remain, okay? Don't criticize. Al tadin et haveral shadigil l'makomo. So, the Yom Kippur War, we survived somehow. There was a tremendous hit over Rut, which affected the Tshuva movement and affected the children. Coming here for a year, and in Ehud Barak's parents' kibbutz, or leftist kibbutz, the kibbutz voted by an overwhelming majority that the kibbutz will pay for whoever wants to put a mezuzah on their front door. Only 2 families in the kibbutz refused to put up a mezuzah. One of them was Ehud Barak's mother. His father was willing to put up a mezuzah. His mother said essentially, over my dead body, do you put up a mezuzah? No, tell me, is she a Zionist? She raised a son. Ehud Barak is the most widely decorated soldier that the Israeli army ever had. He won every award. In the American army, here we don't give many awards. It's a different type of army. The American army, he wouldn't be able to wear his army uniform. There'd be so many medals on it, he'd have to be like a Russian commissar, all bent over or held up by 2 lieutenants, a lieutenant on either side. Do you follow me? No, is he a Zionist or isn't he a Zionist? What if we'll let him get... Ah, sure he's a Zionist. What a difference between his Zionism to my Zionism. Ben-Gurion was a Zionist, yes or no? Absolutely. Ben-Gurion sought out Buddhism, Confucius, studied, stood on his head. There's the famous picture, Paul of Ben-Gurion, a Zionist and not a Zionist. She refused to get married by a rabbi. Ben-Gurion never was married by a rabbi. He was married in New York. He was exiled in New York during World War I. They got married by a justice of the peace. No, a Zionist or not a Zionist. He wanted to fast on Yom Kippur. Paul said to him, you fast on Yom Kippur over my dead body. She would not let him fast on Yom Kippur. Golda Meir, no, Zionist or not a Zionist. Ah, so you see, the minute you get involved in cultural Zionism, you open a Pandora's box. Do me a favor, clutches close the door. The minute you get involved in culture, you get involved in a Pandora's box. Political Zionism, I'm the same Zionist as Barack. All right, he's more left than I am. I'm more right. But we both agree there has to be a state, there has to be an army, there has to be a police force. We have to have an economy. We have to export. We have to have a stock market. We both agree we have to build the country. But when it comes to culture, lo dachida keichem, v'lo machshevotai machshevoteichem. If I can paraphrase Yeshaya Anavi. Follow me. And this becomes the tremendous controversy. A controversy that we still struggle with until today in the year 2012. Now, let me come back to what I told you last week. Herzl was a pragmatist. Some people will do anything for the sake of the cause. Ideas are not that important. And the famous story with his assistant, David Wolfson, who later succeeds him, is buried right next to him on Har Herzl. And Wolfson was a Shomer Shabbos. And Wolfson's nephew only wanted to meet Herzl. You understand, all the Jews, it's like when I would sit in front of the Rav. You understand, Lahavdil, but the Rav, I saw my grandchildren at a wedding, Rav Adin Steinsaltz, who's Masada Kedushin. I saw my grandchildren sitting there with such awe that they're looking at Rav Steinsaltz. That's the wedding. I always tell the story. My wife gave me musa. I should wear a white shirt. You're going to a wedding. You're going to have a bracha. You can't dress like a downstairs, like a shiflet, a dumb person, like you always dress. Put on a white shirt. So, you know, you got to listen to your wife. You know that by now. It's shalom bayit. You got to listen. Yes, dear, the most important words in marriage. So I put on a white shirt, I walk out, I go to the wedding, Malka's there, my wife is there, my children, my grandchildren, we all know the family very well. Actually, it's a tragic story. The boy's mother was killed on the 19 bus, one of the last buses. Our friends blew up, our cousins blew up, and my daughter was appointed his guardian. There were no parents left. The poor boy and his sister and my daughter played a big role in raising them. She should live and be well. So this was part of our family. So I come to the wedding, and I knew Rav Steinsaltz would be Masada Kedushin, and there he is sitting there with a bekisha and a beautiful blue shirt. The exact shirt I took off, he put on. And this is individualism. But you see, this question, you give in, sake of the cause. David Wilson's nephew wanted to meet Herzl. So on Shabbos, David brings the nephew with him to this meeting. And Herzl is smoking, what did he smoke? A pipe, I think. There's a famous picture. He's smoking a pipe on Shabbos. On Sunday, David Wilson tells Herzl, my nephew will never be a Zionist. He was shocked that you smoke on Shabbos. And Herzl said, remember what I told you? Why didn't you tell me in advance? I wouldn't have smoked. So Herzl did everything. Don't bring up cultural Zionism. Keep it under the carpet. I don't want to split the movement. I don't want to cause machloket. I don't want to cause the religious Jews to feel they're threatened. I don't want to get involved in the question, what is Zionism, what is God, what is Torah, what is theology, and all that flows once you get involved in culture. By 1901, Ahad Ha'am's forces were powerful enough that they defeated the political Zionists, and culture was put on the table that the Zionist movement must get involved in culture. At that moment, the religious faction faced a tremendous dilemma. what do we do? How do we react? And face the dilemma that haunts us until today. Unity at any price, or when it comes to Torah, we must make a stand and declare disunity. We can't be part of this. This is against Torah. And in 1 second, I'll go further. Just let me see. I know everyone's name. Machshava Moshe Rav. I don't see him. Am I right? Okay. Matan Erda Chaim Besh. Chaim, have you made the call yet?
I didn't want to call last night. It's too late.
Okay. My children are very nice. Dr. Romain knows them. He will testify. That branch of the family he knows. Michael Weissman. Zach Katz, I do not see. Charlie Hexter, Mori Tarragon, Shmuel Krishna, Nisanel Fishman. Did I see Nisanel? There he is, Nisanel. Elio Wittenberg, I do not see. I imagine some people are not coming back. They make the cheshbon that they got to learn. It's more important. In my opinion, it's a wrong cheshbon because they certainly say that. I don't want to say an extra word. Danny Wolf, Yoni Miller, Moshe Lester. Daniel Lowenstein, did you make the call yet?
Yes, I did.
Did she remember me?
Very much so.
Okay, Baruch Hashem. I can't believe it. A half brother. Anyway, send my very, very best regards. Okay. I taught his half sister before he was born. Guy, get it? It's wow. Moshe, you see, this problem haunts us. Let's think for 1 minute, and we're going to spend many weeks on it. Mizrahi, how do you react? German Orthodoxy. What do you know about German Orthodoxy? Moshe. What was their last tremendous machloket? Rav Hirsch, the Würzburger Rebbe. Do you know German? What does the word Austritt mean? You're not of German origins, I see. Walk out. Austritt. Aus, out, tritt, foot. Separate. Run out. Now it's Rav Hirsch Shita. Would have nothing to do with the Reformed Jews. The Sanel, am I right or wrong? Absolutely nothing. And the Würzburger Rav, Rav Yitzchak Dov's Bamberger, Rav Zeligman Bamberger, was the last great a traditional Talmud Chacham in Germany, has a great-great-grandson who keeps on publishing his works, who lives in Oceanside. If you've come across a Bamberger in Oceanside, he's evidently made some money and he devotes a fortune to publishing his great-grandfather's Svarim. Many from Ktav Yad, fascinating Svarim. He felt that which unites us is more important than that which divides us. And we shouldn't leave the general Gemeinde, the general community. And German Orthodoxy until Hitler, in every community, every large community, there were two schools. One was called the Austritt Gemeinde, and one was called the general Gemeinde. You follow? And there was big differences in their Hashkafa. They were both Frum and both Medakdek in Mitzvahs and Chalaka Chamura. But Austritt, yes or no? This was an issue that wouldn't keep quiet. Then you come to America. 1957. I need not tell you, 1956 I should say. If you've studied the Sylvie era by my good friend Aaron Rakefet, you see that's the heart of the book. Austritt until the mid-50s, all of America was Mizrahi, was united, was joined, synagogue council. Orthodoxy was powerless, looked upon as an ancient weed, forget about it, it's finished. Then post-World War II, everyone came in, the giants came in, the great Rabbanim came in, the Rebbeim came in, and in 1956, the synagogue council, do you know the way it worked? The synagogue council no longer exists, but the way it worked, That's a new cast on your hand?
Yeah.
How is it healing?
I don't know. They don't do x-rays in this country until you're good and done.
Until it's too late, you
until
mean.
Until it's too late, yeah.
Okay. Romain, see what you can do from after class. I want to find out if he's alive. It's my top student for many years. He was here already 3 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think that he and Matan came in 3 years ago. And they meet me and they say, Rebbe, we know you inside out. I look at them, how do you know me? In their lunch break at the UCLA, they used to listen to my shayurim. Kol hakavod, back here. Gentlemen, the synagogue council worked as follows. Every 2 years there was a new president. Orthodox, conservative, reform. Orthodox, conservative, reform. When it was an Orthodox president, the inauguration was held in an Orthodox synagogue, generally in Kehillat Jejeshurun, KJ, the most important or most influential Orthodox shul in the Western world, generally in KJ. When it was conservative, it was held in a conservative temple. When it was reform, it was held in Temple Emmanuel. 56, Mo Feuerstein, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, from Boston, is the new president of the synagogue council, before 56. He is the Orthodox president. A few years have gone by, and now it's a reform lay person. The inauguration will be in Temple Emmanuel. And Mo Feuerstein, who worshiped two gods, the Rav, Mori Rebbe, and Reb Aaron Kotler. That's something hard for you to understand. But at that time in America, in the 30s, the Rav had many good people who followed him faithfully, such as the Feuersteins, Mr. Irwin Bunim. When Reb Aaron came to America, Reb Aaron was a dynamo. You can't imagine. Read my description of him in my new book. Read about him in the Suvi era. Reb Aaron was a dynamo, burning fire. His eyes, his pupils, were little Sifrei Torah. I had the schut yet to take a bechina with him and do very well and make him happy and talk with him and learning and get into Lakewood with all that that implies. And so many people were now attracted to Reb Aaron Kotler as well. And they mamish worshipped two giants. So the Rav gets the question from Mo Feuerstein, Rebbe, can I attend Temple Emmanuel? No, the Rav realized this question is a real hot potato. It is political dynamite. So the Rav told him, we'll call our meeting of the Rabbi in the Histadrut Rabbanim, the RCA, there was the Halachic Commission. The Halachic Commission was formed in contradistinction to the Committee on Jewish Law of the Rabbinic Assembly of the Conservative Movement. Who was on the Halachic Commission? The Rav was the dominating figure. Rabbi Belkin was on it. Rabbi Chaim Heller was on it. You can read Louis Bernstein's History of RCA, his doctorate. You'll get more names. But no, the Rav is going to call a meeting. Gentlemen, until you can get all these gedolim together, everyone is busy in their own world. Everyone lives a few blocks away from the other one. In order to walk those few blocks, it's like crossing the Brooklyn Bridge. How are you going to get them together? There's an expression in Yiddish. I'm coming Sunday. I'm traveling on Monday. I'm thinking about it Tuesday. How can you budge on Wednesday? If Thursday we're busy getting ready for Shabbos, Friday is Erev Shabbos, and who travels on Shabbos? So while this was going on, there was a wedding. And at the wedding, Reb Aaron was Masadik Kedushin. Now, Reb Aaron Kotler, you have to know, I saw this with my own eyes. I tried to emulate him. I have to tell you, my wife hit me over the head and said, it's not nice, it's disrespectful. And once again, I gave in. Reb Aaron would only go to a wedding with a Mishnah Brura. And every spare moment he was sitting and learning Mishnah Berurah. You know, at a wedding, you waste a lot of time. You're sitting, and today it's worse than ever because they divide the men and women. So today, I don't waste time. If there's separate seating, I am the wife, we don't stay. Separate seating goes against the Pasuk in the Torah. Kenya Zo, the Isha, the Vivi, Mo, the Davak, the Ishto, Vahayu, the Besar, Echad. It's an open Pasuk in the Torah. Chassidim, all right, they have their problems. If I go to a Gerer wedding, I know we're going to be in two separate rooms. But Litvisha, normal, what, when, where, they go out with their wives to every restaurant, and at a wedding they separate Bein Hadveikim. It's against the Torah. Pardon me, I don't understand it. But be it as it may, you go to a wedding, you sit there, and all you hear is Lashon Hara, Rechilit. Imagine if you could sit with a Sefer and learn Mishnah Berurah. So Rabbaran is sitting with a Sefer, Ebenun, up front, mixed seating. In those days, everything was mixed seating. It was a different world. When I spoke about Tuesday night, that we're frumer than our Rebbeim, that's very bad because there's Mesorah. What I should have said Tuesday night, and let me add, those of you that heard me Tuesday night, I want to add one thought. That when the tuna controversy first broke out in the early 60s, if you're allowed to eat tuna because it's in the cans and you don't see the fins and scales, and Rabbi Tendler was machmir, so I was teaching right next door to Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, and then went in Reitz and YU. So we became very close. Rabbi Aaron now was teaching in the yeshiva, and I'm giving a shiur in the yeshiva, and because he's giving a much older, much more important shiur, and I say to him, Rebbe, are we allowed to eat tuna? What's going on? It's a vada. Certainly you're allowed. And I'll bring you the greatest proof. My tata Reb Meisha had gegessen tuna. My father Reb Meisha Soloveitchik ate tuna. And believe me, that is the greatest proof. So at the wedding, he goes over to Reb Aaron Kotler. It's a true story. The world doesn't know the inside story. I lived it. Goes over to the wedding. And Reb Aaron puts down the Mishnah Berurah, you know, Mo Feuerstein, and Rebbe Chabashai, it's a fleg, I have to ask a question. And he tells Reb Aaron that he's invited the Temple of Emmanuel. No, within a few days, I have it in front of me, the famous Psak Din, signed by, I believe it was, yes, 11 Gedolei Yisrael. Look into the Suga Irai, translated into English, all their signatures. Absolutely forbidden. How can you sit with conservative and reform synagogue council? Totally forbidden. 100% mixed board of rabbis. 1,000,000% forbidden. You know what the mixed board of rabbis means? You're making a statement that we are equal. You have a choice. What's the word they use today? Pluralism. Orthodox, conservative, reform. We are equal. Okay? It's a tremendous question. I need not tell you, the Rav did not sign. The Rav was asked to sign and he refused. He gave a Teretz from Bubba, again, I don't know how to translate that, an answer for his grandmother, that he's waiting for the committee to meet and they'll make a decision. I have to tell you, that committee has not met until today. It could be in the Olam HaEmes, the Rav is taka sitting with Reb Shmuel Belkin, Reb Chaim Heller, and Reb Menachem Kasha, and whoever else was on the committee and the Gedolim of that period. And maybe they're having a meeting upstairs. But in this world, that committee never met. The Rav, of course, was interviewed, and he allowed himself to be interviewed, which goes against the grain of the Rav. Again, if you're familiar with Rav Kefet's writings on the Rav, he was not a public figure in that sense. He was a perfectionist. But on this issue, he allowed himself to be interviewed, and he set down the basic guidelines that were to guide the RCA until modern times. Essentially, on religious matters, we cannot cooperate. Lo dachi dakechem, we are in two different worlds. We submit to the halacha, they do not. But on non-religious matters such as Zionism, economic matters, social matters, anti-Semitism, general issues, that which unites us is infinitely more important than that which divides us, and we absolutely have to join together. I have to tell you in parentheses, that at the time I was caught between two worlds, Lakewood and NYU. So I thought that the Rav's viewpoint was revolutionary. When I became a bit of a Talmud Chacham and started to learn and attempted to master Kol HaTorah Kula, so I saw, watch the Rav's Chiddush. His great-grandfather said it many years ago. There's a tshuv in the Meshuv Dava of the Netziv of Elazhin, and Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, and Chelik Aleph, I believe it's tshuv Mem Dalet, if I'm not mistaken, you can look it up. And there the Netziv has exactly the same approach as the Rav, 100%. So I see, or I saw already, that the Rav was not as revolutionary as I thought. But it doesn't end there. It doesn't end there at all. What's your name? You're...
Simon.
1 second. You're here in the Kollel, or?
No, I'm just visiting. I'm leaving for Beckley, Maryland tonight.
One second. You're from Cleveland?
Baltimore.
Oh, you're from Baltimore. You spoke with me. Let me write down your name so I should master it if I meet you again. Simon, and what's your last name?
Blechman.
B-L-E-C-H-M.
K-H-M-A-N.
Well, wait, B-L?
B-L-E-K-H-M-A-N.
Blechman. Wow, that's a strange spelling. K instead of a C.
No.
Blechman. Blechman, okay. Got it. Baltimore. We met in Baltimore. You walked me, as I recall.
Yes.
And you heard that introduction. You tell that rabbi, I never had such a fine introduction. Even Tova Lichtenstein did not equal his depth.
Okay, kol hakavod.
Gentlemen, it doesn't end here. You heard Rakefa Tuesday night? What was he ranting and raving about? Ah, but you think it's only Rakefa? Sure, when I walked away Tuesday night, some people were happy and some people fanatic. R.A.D., Lakewood boy. All right, I'm a big boy, I can handle it. No? Did you see the latest issue of Ami? Do I have it here? No, I have it in my office. Show it to you next week. You've heard of Ami? I haven't heard of it either, but I understand. When Jewish Observer folded, it left a vacuum. And filling that vacuum is Bamishpacha. Jewish Observer folded. Yeah, went out of business. They owe a fortune of money. I don't know what finally happened. Did they give back the money or etc.? I don't know what happened. But they folded, it must be a year ago. And I see why in America everyone gets Bamishpacha. Mishpacha, it's a weekly, it's colorful, it's beautiful, it's popular. Beautiful advertisements, pomegranate. Oh boy, you think the Jews in America, that they have idealism, Mesirat Nefesh? Their Mesirat Nefesh is 1/1,000,000th of what an Israeli kid growing up in our circles has. 1/1,000,000th, if that much. Ah, pomegranate. You don't know what pomegranate is right now. I'll explain to you privately. Oh man, the private butcher. Cut of meat, the bakery, the takeout, the prices. Wow. But that's Baruch Hashem. People can afford it. Chassidim can afford it. Kol hakavod. They must have gone to YU's graduate schools. They must have advanced degrees and make a good living. What can I say? Simon, then another magazine came out, Ami. And it's right of center, trying to fill the gap, Jewish Observer, but a little bit more open. You should see their main article this weekend, their screaming headlines, this very problem. Rakefet opened his mouth Tuesday? I mean, Yateid Neman this past Friday. They threw the gauntlet down. I guess they reached the conclusion, if Rakefet can call it conservative Judaism, it's time for us to yell, to shout, to challenge this very problem. Chovevei Torah, have you heard of it? A reaction, a counter-reaction. Everyone says, why you moved right? All right, why you moved right? So, of course, if you know physics, to every reaction, there's a counter-reaction. I'm not opposed. Tinat Sof from Taber Chachma. All right, I fit in, I'm in the middle. I'm a Talmud of the Rav, I haven't changed, but fine, I'm not opposed. right wing, left wing. Debate is the source of continuity and intellectual greatness. A Talmud of the Rav, bear that in mind. We never hid from innovation, challenge, and dialogue. Dialectical tension, as the Rav used to call it. Chovevei Torah began. Well, they've been around for more than a decade. It may even be a decade and a half already. One of their key words, pluralism. Joint services, Tisha B'Av. You told me about one I know out in the coast, that on Tisha B'Av there was a joint service. What does a conservative reform rabbi have to do with an Orthodox rabbi on Tisha B'Av? What are they fasting? Chamishai Inuyim? Tisha B'Av? Mourning over a Beit HaMikdash? They say in davening? Pour out their hearts to the Ribbono Shel Olam that we should have a Beit HaMikdash again? V'shom Na'aleh? Wow. What do we have in common? Ah, joint service. More than that. Faculty of Chovevei Torah. I saw with my own eyes. I saw the list. Two women rabbis are listed on the faculty. And when I complained, they told me, well, they're only teaching psychology or pastoral skills, etc. First of all, there are enough Orthodox rabbis in the world to teach psychology and pastoral skills. But secondly, why use the title rabbi? Use the title, doctor, PhD. I have no objection. But rabbi of Marilyn Monroe, you're making a statement. And they lied to me, which even bothers me more. Oh, Rebbe, you're right. We're going to erase it. You'll see, you'll see. This was told to me maybe 10 years ago, walking home from the Kotel on Rehov Jabotinsky. They've erased it like Nathanael is fishing at this moment in time. His name is Fishing. Moshe, this debate goes on. They just threw the gauntlet on me. You should see that article, and it's by Rabbi Adlerstein. It's not by a right winger by far. He's a very open, broad individual. You should see the article. You should see Yateid Naman. You should see the challenge. Oh, you, RCA. Why you? Where are you? Declare these rabbis chutz l'tchum, they are conservative. Have the guts to emulate Rakefet. It's an open issue. Where do you draw the line? We struggled with this problem from the moment we left the ghetto. The problem was articulated by the Chatam Sofer. And you understand why. It began in Germany. They left the ghetto. It took many years. It's not a world of computers. It's not like today. You can turn on your computer and hear the most fabulous chazan in the world saying slichas in Parkey Synagogue Saturday night. Rabbi Kanta Helfka, did you hear him or not? You don't have to say slichas. Just listen. You don't say, I don't know. Hold the slichas in front of you and sing along with him. Wow. And look at the audience. You can probably identify 100 different people that you know sitting there in parties Saturday night. It's not the world of today. It took time. And finally it reaches Hungary. It crosses the border. Enlightenment. And the Chatam Sofer saw what the Enlightenment did in Germany. Take a look at Moshe Mendelssohn. With the best of intentions, a Jew who was a great-grandson of Rav Moshe Isserles, the Ramah, named for him. A Jew who was Shomer Shabbos 100%. A Jew whose wife covered her hair down to her forehead. By the time it reached his great-grandchildren, there was not one direct descendant who died a Jew. And the Chatam Sofer declared war, Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. Anything new is forbidden, and we have nothing to do with them. And then in Germany, when Orthodoxy resuscitated itself, when it rejuvenated itself, when there was Priatamatim, when Rabbi Shimshon Paul Hirsch went to Frankfurt and found nothing there, not even not a minyan Shomer Shabbos, read his memoirs. Read how he describes, and I've often said this, and I say it again, it's very, very important. You want to judge a community, their spiritual tenacity, their spiritual commitment, go visit their mikveh and see what condition their mikveh is in. My wife still went to the old mikveh in South Philadelphia. If you would know what that was like, you'll understand why in Philadelphia not one kid remained the Shomer Shabbos. God have mercy. Rav Hirsch describes, he came from Frankfurt, I'm quoting Rav Hirsch now, I wouldn't use these words, that the mikveh was set in an alleyway where only swine would pass. That's how filthy, that's how dirty it was. And Rav Hirsch wrote about a great miracle. But Alstritt, and this problem haunts us. All right, now imagine you're there in 1901. And there's no, I don't want to be, supercilious. There's no simple answer. We struggle with it. I rabbis in the field, my Talmidim, I've gotten more questions on this issue than any other question. I mean, generally speaking, what are you going to ask a question with Arab? Arab, they're experts in America, experts in the world. Bring in an expert. He can, an Arab, you can have all the theoretical knowledge. But how you put up an Arab today with the phone, with the phones, with the highways, with the phone poles, with the electric poles, with the wire going on top. You need experts who know how to do it. In New York, by the way, you have no idea how this Arab Friday problem engendered a response. Some of it is just sickening, that you Orthodox Jews are a bunch of phonies. You look for legal fictions. It's like the whole non-Orthodox world found an issue to jump on. But okay, an Arab is an Arab, and if you don't believe in an Arab, you're not Bikoris, and that's a Tshuvat HaRash. That's not from a contemporary. That's from a Rishon. So an Arab, you bring in an expert. And they're experts. I was down in Australia, down in Australia. And I couldn't get over that the Arab was accepted by everyone. So they told me the secret. They brought my classmate, Rabbi Shimi Aida, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. He came down, he built the Arab. New Shimi Aida, why you people certainly going to accept him? Lakewood people have to love him. He went to Lakewood from YU. Chassidim, what can they do? Chassidim are much more makil than the Dvakim when it comes to an Arab because of the Mishkanot, because of the Machloikis, the Beth Ephraim, and the Mishkanot Yaakov, and they go like the Beth Ephraim. He was Chassidish, he was Palish. So, Arab, Shabbat, Kashrut, all right. But these questions are so delicate. How do you handle them? What do you do? So I give you one simple example, then I want to go into 1901. Give you one simple example. I once got a call from Boca, from a rabbi who's teaching at this moment in this very building, Rabbi Schneider, and then my student in the call now. So he calls me and he says, Rebbe, am I allowed to go to a Reform synagogue to lecture Shavuos night? So I say, first of all, whenever I get a question like this, I want to know, what does the local Orthodox rabbi say? I don't want to be a Poreid Skeda sitting in Jerusalem coming into Boca in Florida. So he tells me, Rabbi Kenny Brander is sending me. The rabbi is sending me. So I said, he's sending you. So that problem is solved. I said, are you the only speaker? He said, yes. I said, if you're the only speaker and everyone knows you're there to explain the Torah viewpoint, I would say absolutely go. So he went, Avi went, and he became a celebrity. You know what happened? Have you ever been to Boca? In these communities, there are no streets to walk on. They were made for cars. So to walk home, you're walking on a semi-highway. It's Sakonet Nefashat. So the Reform Temple told the police. The police escorted him home. And the next day, in all the Floridian papers, front page, rabbi walks 2.3 miles to police escort so he would not be hurt by an oncoming car. And there's a picture of Rabbi Schneider walking behind the police car. Okay? So you see, it's a delicate question. On the other hand, if you're going to arrest me in New York City, and Chovev Torah wants to sponsor a conference, and conservative reform are going to speak with Orthodox, and I don't know, I can't see it. I absolutely can't see it. I don't believe the Rev would allow it. Absolutely not. And this becomes very touchy when you come to Limud. Limud became, I don't have to tell you, in Russia it's very big, in England it's big. And 2 years ago they wanted me to come to England to teach in Limud. I said right away, does the chief rabbi appear? No, he can't appear because he'll offend the Haredim. But I said, you want me to come? And I should speak if the chief rabbi is not coming. But I have to tell you, it's an open question. I can't do it, because if I do it, look what they're saying. Harab Aron Ram Kefet Me Yerushalayim Sheshimesh Gedola Yisrael Et Harab Yosef Tova Levi Salabetchik Rabbaran Kotel, etc., etc., is giving Yeshia what is the oral Torah. Next door, there's a conservative rabbi giving Yeshia on tradition and innovation. And the talacha cannot be frozen. And two doors down, there's a reform rabbi. Why the halacha has no relevancy for the modern man. You follow me? Their point of view, Moshe, is that I'm the last person observing halacha. No relevancy today. Call me Lasta. Don't call me Rakhasa. You understand? On the other hand, Your last Rabbi Lamb, he's a wise man in his prime, a very wise man. Your last Rabbi Lamb, your last Rabbi Riskin, your last Rabbi Lukasin, they all went. What? We should lose out on the chance to teach Torah to Jews who otherwise wouldn't hear it? It's a very delicate issue. Gentlemen, back to 19. Michael, with me? I can't give a black and white answer.
My experience with conservatives.
But you appreciate that I'm suffering?
I disagree with you.
Why do you disagree?
Because I think that there's a golden opportunity.
You agree with Rabbi Lamb?
Rabbis to speak in conservative and reform shuls and show them the power of community and halacha and the impact that it has on their lives and their children's lives.
Well, I would be very happy to do that if I'm the only speaker. I'm talking. There you saw was Matir.
Well, that's not always going to happen.
In other words, in
contrast, I believe that an Orthodox rabbi has much more to offer than the shallowness and the hollowness of conservative rabbis
Okay.
who have very little substance.
And Limud, you have to understand that my dear student, Michael Miller, comes from a conservative background, so he's speaking from experience. It's a real problem. I appreciate what you're saying, and I cannot rule it out. But I struggle with this issue. You understand? I'm caught between, I understand pluralism, and I understand the message it leaves. It's a very delicate problem. I can only tell you, if you've studied my book From Washington to Washington, I tell you the story of my debate with the reformer conservative rabbi back in Irvington, New Jersey in the mid-60s, and what happens during that debate. So Baruch Hashem, I appreciate what you're saying.
I mean, I would walk out of a sermon of a brilliant speaker in Philadelphia with a better understanding of Emerson and Thoreau.
Right. All right, this is well known. Okay. But anyway, the problem is real, and I do not want to criticize Rabbis Lamb or Riskin or Lukstein. I understand what they're saying. I personally would never say no if I'm the only speaker and it's made clear I represent Torah Judaism. But I have a big problem sitting with Reform and Conservative. In the 60s in Maplewood, South Orange, when I'm starting from scratch, I felt imperative to do. Where it's Limud and a major statement, I have a problem. Okay.
You're a very good company.
I'm a good company with the problem or without the problem?
No, and your point of view is in very, very good company.
I struggle. I struggle with it.
I worked with my rabbi in Philadelphia. He wouldn't walk into a conservative.
I struggle with it. But I want the class to feel that this problem of 1901 is not just 1901. It was 1800 in Hungary. It was 1860 in Germany, 1956 in America. And right now, when you're dealing with Chovei VeTorah, when you're dealing with them, you should see what they do to Rabbi Avi Weiss and Ami, and very respectfully, but wow. And when you're dealing with my student, Rabbi Joseph Kanevsky in Los Angeles, you got a real, real problem there. How far can we go? Okay. Now, in 1901, there was pandemonium because the more religious element recognized this will be a major problem. What do you do? And they decided to hold the convention in March of 1902 in Vilna. At this convention, they would reach a decision how to proceed. Why did they choose Vilna? I need not tell you. Vilna was called the Yerushalayim of Lithuania. We Jews always get carried away with Yerushalayim, and I don't have to tell you today, you'll ask Jews about Borough Park, they'll tell you Borough Park, the Yerushalayim of New York. You'll ask Jews about Baltimore, and they'll tell you very proudly, and they have reason to be proud, Baltimore, the Yerushalayim of Maryland. Los Angeles, I need not tell you, go to Pico Boulevard, you can walk a few kilometers and find 80% of the stores are Shomer Shabbos, Yerushalayim of the West Coast. And I'm saying Pico Boulevard, imagine Fairfax and Hancock Park, Allah Kama Bakama. In 1902, they met in Vilna among the people who came with Gedolei Yisrael. And at that meeting, they made the decision to remain within the general Zionist movement, but to organize a faction that would be devoted to religious Zionism. This decision colors the Mizrahi movement, and I would say to a certain degree it becomes one of the greatest success stories in modern Torah history. You take the state of Israel, and nowadays it's not just Mizrahi. It's using all the political names. It's Shas. It's Agudat Yisrael. It's Degel HaTorah. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Shomer Shabbos Jews live in consonance with the basic Mizrahi ideology. It is a great achievement. But how did it begin? What's fascinating is we have an eyewitness description of the convention in Vilna. Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon, known as Rabbi Yehuda Leib Fishman originally, make believe you recognize the name so the ignorant pass for the wise, recognize the name Rabbi Yehuda Leib Fishman, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon. He was the first minister of religion of the first Israeli government, a very good friend of Ben-Gurion. And whenever they spoke to each other, they spoke to each other in Mamo Lashon, in Yiddish. They accused Rabbi Maimon when Ben-Gurion, they celebrated 100 years since his birth, and they analyzed why did BG give in to so many religious demands? The religious Jews in 1948-1949 were a very small percentage of the country, perhaps 15%. At the most 20%, but nowhere near what they later became, and yet he gave in Chuppah v'Kedushin b'day HaRabbanut. The army has to be kosher and Shomer Shabbat. He gave in on so many important issues. And among the theories, they blame his friendship with Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon. Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon was a Bessarabian, Hasidic Jew, a Talmud Chacham, a Yodea Sefer, and he published many, many svarim, including what I'm quoting from now, Midei Chodesh B'Chodsho. I'm quoting from the 8th volume, page 140. And Rabbi Maimon, in general, you have to know his scholarship at times is embellished. If you've read Sari Hameya, you can't, as the Rebbe used to say, we once asked Rebbe, Rebbe, you hear all these stories about Gedolei Yisrael, and then you hear the same story about this gadol, that gadol. Did it really happen? And the Rebbe said so beautifully, Simon, it's not important whether it really happened. What's important about these stories is that the Jews believed it, that this is the way they depicted their Gedolei Yisrael. It's a very insightful word from the Rebbe. But this description of 1902 in Vilna actually happened. Sammy, how do I know it happened? Because he was there. He was an eyewitness. And it's a beautiful description. Who came? Famous Rabbanim, Rav Reines, who we'll talk about. Rav Reines, who was a graduate of Volozhin, was a great Talmud Chacham. The Elder Dayan of Vilna, Reb Shlomo HaKohen. There were two great Dayanim in Vilna, Reb Shlomo HaKohen and Reb Bezalel HaKohen. They sat on the Beis Din with a young man who came in, Reb Chaim Moiser Grzynski. You follow? That was the Beis Din in Vilna. And they were called the Kohanim HaGedolim. And Reb Shlomo HaKohen came, and then there was a son-in-law of a big Hasidic Rebbe who came, and the son-in-law was dressed Shabbistic with a white bekisha and a white shtreimel, and you had young men who became famous. As there was Reb Chaim Fischel Epstein. Anyone here from St. Louis should recognize the name. He later became the chief rabbi of St. Louis. He was there, and there were authors, writers, polemists, publicists who contributed to the Haskalah Press on a religious Zionist tone. And here they are. Reb Reines gets up, and he speaks about the fact. And he quotes the Medrash that bracha could only come to the world when man did malacha. And he quotes the Medrash how the rain and everything that happens, first man has to be there, man has to turn the soil, and only afterwards will God bless him, because there'll be man to acknowledge God's blessings. And he says, now with Shibat Zion, we have to turn the soil, we have to start the process. And this is exactly an echo of Drishat Zion, or Reb Tzvi Hirsch Kalisha, that we spoke about a few weeks ago. And Reb Shlomo HaKohen, they now decide they're going to organize a subdivision that's going to be committed to religious Zionism. And they decide to take the exact name that Rabbi Mulliver introduced. Remember, with the Chovev Beit Zion, he called his office Mizrahi, Merkaz Ruchani. Everyone thinks Mizrahi means east, but it's not exactly east, because Yerushalayim is east of America, but you can be in many other countries where Yerushalayim is west, Yerushalayim is north, Yerushalayim is south. Did you ever go down to Australia, see which way you daven? South Africa, see which way you daven? England, see which way you daven? It's different than America. So if everyone thinks Mizrahi is east, no, it may mean that, but the real meaning is Merkaz Ruchani. As religious Jews, we look at it as the center. And then Rav Shlomo HaKohen gets up and gives Birchat Kohanim. And Rav Maimon describes so beautifully that the Elder Dayan is giving Birchat Kohanim to a new movement, to the Mizrahi. And the Hasidic Jew, Reb Mordechai Ashkenazi, after the Birchat Kohanim, jumps up in his shtreimel, and he breaks out a bottle of Carmel wine, and everyone drinks l'chaim. Now you can't start to appreciate what that means. Today, Kanayin Hara, we can get every wine from Israel under the sun, all over the world. Do you have any idea what it meant in Russia if you could smuggle in a bottle of Israeli wine for the refusnik community? Do you have any idea what that meant for them to see a bottle of Israeli wine and at the communist regime? Could you imagine in Vilna a bottle of Carmel wine and they're drinking l'chaim? 1902. I can tell you one anecdote that I didn't want to tell with in front of Joseph at Sabbath. I didn't want to embarrass him, but this anecdote is in my book. I have written it, and I hope it'll be eternalized. Whenever Jews will talk about Mesiras Nefesh, they'll talk about this little story of Yosef HaTzadik. And he told it to me right after he got out. In other words, as you saw from Tuesday night, we know each other 30 years today, more than 30 years. And when he got out of prison and he comes to Israel, and it's about 10 days after his arrival, so he told me the following story in Heichal Shlomo. That's where he was going to speak, and I was introducing him and translating from Hebrew to English. It was an Amuna women's group, as he said, from Canada. He has a better memory than I do, because I can never remember what is Amuna or Amit. Like all good Jews, we have two women's organizations rivaling each other. It was Amuna. So he told me the following story. If you want to feel the story of what we're talking about, when he was in prison, if I told you the story, stop me. I don't want to repeat it, if you've heard it. When he was in prison, so if he wouldn't get matzah for Pesach, he threatened to go on a hunger strike. So by the mid-70s, he was very well known in the Western world, and the Russians couldn't afford to lose him. It would have been very bad publicity for the communist system. And the more famous the refuseniks became and the prisoners of Zion, it gave them a certain ounce of protection. So the Russians arranged with the Dutch embassy that represented Israel's interest, because there was no longer an Israeli embassy in Russia, they weren't allowed in. So they arranged with the Dutch to bring in matzah for Yosef, and they would give it him in prison. So he said every year the matzah would come in, and the KGB would rip the wrapping off. He shouldn't see the Hebrew lettering, the wrapping. And one year, they were late in getting the matzah. There was a foul up. They had to get it to him quickly. The KGB forgot to rip the wrapping off. And he saved the wrapping with Aviv matzahs from Petach Tikva. I think that company today produces under a different label. I think it's Carmel. They merged with another company. They put out very good matzah. And he saved the wrapping, Hebrew lettering, a product of Eretz Yisrael. You follow, Shmuel? You can't appreciate it. You go in anywhere, Chicago, Borough Park, L.A., you can buy any Israeli product off the shelves, right or wrong. Go into Baltimore, the biggest kosher supermarket in the world outside of Israel. You can buy any Israeli product under the sun. We can't appreciate it. But there is Yosef in prison, in labor camp, and he has wrapping. He saved it till the day he was released. This was the Carmel wine in Vilna. My dear students, the founder of Mizrahi, the man who gets all the credit, the illusion, the one who pushed it, was Reb Yitzchak Yaakov Reines, R-E-I-N-E-S, Reish Yud Nun Vav Samach. His years, 1840 to 1915. He was a very fascinating individual. If we could only put him together with the Rav, with the Shun Shaful Hirsch, and have them sit at one table and discuss Torah and general culture, it would be epic making. Netanel, he was a great Talmud Chacham, a graduate of the Lashon, but he was also a maskil. Enlightened. He knew Russian, he knew German, he knew math, he knew philosophy. He published, had a whole approach to Talmudic study, logic. To a certain degree, he predated Reb Chaim Brisker and Reb Chaim's revolutionary method. There was tremendous logic behind his thinking. Higayon, he's published, you can read it. A very, very fascinating individual. We who are in Yeshiva University, if Yeshiva University had a historic sense, we owe Yeshiva University to the school that he founded in Lida, Yeshiva Torah Vadat, in Lida. It was exactly the concept of Labriyut, what Yeshiva University calls Torah Umada, what they call Torah Vadat, was exactly that concept. It was a high school, and he taught on two levels, Torah and general studies. A student should be prepared for the big world. Can anyone tell me who was the Rosh Yeshiva in Lida? No. Have you studied Rakafet Aharon and the monograph on Reb Shlomo Palachek, the Mechita Eloi Simon? You've heard the name?
Only from you.
Only from me. Oh my gosh. He has relatives living all over Israel. The Mechita Eloi, Reb Shlomo Palachek, the greatest Talmud, Reb Chaim Brisker said on the Mechita Azam, Mishunat the Kiloi Chabek Nishtin, Mein Leben Gizen. Mishunadik means a unique prodigy, a unique genius. I never saw, but the Mechita had one fault line. Oh, Charlie, he was a religious Zionist, and he fit in to Torah Vadas. When he left Brisk and left Reb Chaim to go to lead it, to head up the new yeshiva, there are two versions of the story. He asked Reb Chaim for a letter of recommendation, and Reb Chaim said, I will only give it to you if you won't go to Lida and get involved with newfangled ideas. And there are two versions. One version says that the Mechita said to Reb Chaim, Eibazei dafich das nicht. If that's what you insist, I don't need the letter of recommendation. Another version is that Reb Chaim cried and gave him the letter of recommendation, ala po v'chamato. And two versions. When Lida was destroyed in World War I, the yeshiva never reopened, Rabbi Reines died. So that's when Reb Shlomo Lapalachek went to the Pachtimoni, which was a Mizrahi school in Bialystok. And when Rabbi Revel was desperate to bring a first-rate gadol to the United States, he turned to the Mechita. And September 1st, 1922 is the most important day in American Torah history. It's the day the Mechita got off the boat in Battery Park, arriving in America to teach at the yeshiva, not to raise funds, not to travel, not to give drushes, but to teach Torah at the highest level in yeshivas, Reb Yitzchak Chanan. And that, of course, when the Mechita dies, the Soloveitchik family comes to America, and it's because of the Mechita that we are sitting here today at this moment. What's fascinating about the Mechita is that his childhood friend, Reb Lazer Yehuda Finkel, who was then near a Rosh Yeshiva, the son of the Alta from Slabodka. So when Reb Lazer Yehuda Finkel visited America on fundraising for Mir in 1926, he said to the Mechita, Shleimela, Shleimela, why did you leave Europe? You would have been the most famous Rosh Yeshiva today. And the Mechita responded, Lazer, even if I remained in Europe, I would still have to have one foot in America. My hashkafas don't fit in with the Yudapayish yeshiva. And that was the Mechita. He was zaycha to four children, Dar Yesharim. There are endless great and great-great-grandchildren living al admat HaKadosh. I was one Sandak at a brit of a Talmud of mine married to his great-granddaughter, and I saw endless little shleimelas running around in that yeshiv, all Yotzei Chalutzav of the Mechita Eloi. So Mizrahi was on the map. Now, watch. One more point. Mizrahi was on the map. But you see, when they got involved in cultural Zionists, it was mainly pamphlets, textbooks, articles. Acharam was a fabulous polemist. I've told you that. You can read his writings. I once knew them all by heart. And I told you, Rav David Lifshitz knew it all by heart. The Rav knew it all by heart. They all had a deal with him. He was challenging. He was a big Talmud Chacham, and he knew how to bother you. But they didn't organize a school. ultimately, when you get involved in cultural Zionism, culture cannot be passed on without a school. I need not tell you, you're going to be a father soon. There are other fathers sitting here of children. Chinuch, what you're going to go through, what school do I send my son to, my daughter to? Why is chinuch so important? I need not tell you. Chaim, without chinuch, where would you be today? And proper chinuch, where Maisa Nefesh were. Here, they brought Rav David Miller to America because they feel he can give chinuch that's needed there. Okay, could be. Chinuch is the most basic element of our lives. And you know, if you make a mistake, the results are tragic. I don't have to elaborate. I've been around not just my own life, but I've seen so many other lives, and results are tragic. Chinuch is crucial. By 1911, the World Zionist Movement decided it's time to organize the first Zionist high school in the world. And they made the decision to organize the Gymnasium Herzliya in Tel Aviv. A high school. What are you going to be teaching? Go into the gymnasium in Rehavia today. They wouldn't even let Rakefet give a lecture. Religious persuasion, coercion. The last thing in the world they want their students to hear someone who knows Torah and can speak in contemporary language. The army, how many times do you hear people protesting? My grandson's unit was at the Kotel. So the kids stopped, they met Rabbi, I think it was Rabbi Ria, Rabbi Binair, one of the Rabbanim, famous Rabbanim from our world, the Tzioni Dati world. And they asked him for a bracha. And Rabbi Binair, and he gave a bracha and benched them and this and then what place. One of the kids there was not religious, and somehow his parents found out, and they told Carmela Ben Menashe, they told the reporter from the radio who specializes in finding scandals in the army, and she went crazy. They forced the kids to hear a lecture by this crazy religious Zionist rabbi against their will, religious coercion. My grandson told me every word was a lie. They were walking away from the cult, and they made that up. A few kids said, Kvot harav tevareichotonim. Ribbono shel olam, how many times that love me? Who and what can I do? If I give a drasha, they ask me to give them a blessing. You know what am I going to say? No. Birchat hedot, al pei kala beinecha. And I'm already a Yerushalmi, I have a school, I have over 11,000 Talmidim in the classrooms, I have a bit of it, you follow me, Yoni? So I'll give a bracha, mela, no headlines, religious coercion, my grandson. So all right, the army investigated, found out it was a big bluff, but she has a big mouth and it causes harm. But a high school is serious bananas. You're going to teach Tanakh, how are you going to teach Tanakh? No, when I went to high school, I had to learn Shakespeare. No, you're going to do, I had to learn Greek mythology. You're going to teach Tanakh like it's Greek mythology. You know what that means for a religious Jew? Devar Hashem Zu Halacha? Teaching Tanakh? Mythology? Shem Yerachem? No? Mizrahi people were furious. They held a separate convention afterwards. 35 key people attended. 23 voted to stay in the World Zionist Movement. 12 voted to leave. We can have nothing to do with teaching upbeat courses under the aegis of an organization that we belong to. Those 12 later become among the founding members of Agudat Yisrael. Among those who stayed was a very famous German painter, sculptor, from Jew. What was his name? Hermann Struck. Let me see. Yeah, Hermann Struck. I have the name right. I've seen his work. He was one of the people who stayed. Rabbi Reines got up and said, I would rather make common cause with irreligious Jews and guard the unity of Klal Yisrael than join up with separatists who work against the unity of Klal Yisrael. What did they decide to do? Tit for tat. whatever the secular Zionists do, we will do. And they organized the first religious high school in the state of Israel, Tachkamoni, in Yaffa. Notice the difference of location. How did Yaffa Tel Aviv begin? In Yaffa. Run down, impoverished, poor, schnurrers, struggling Jews. They made money, they moved north to Tel Aviv. And each area of Tel Aviv, as it was built, it's like running away from the east side. You went to the Bronx. Wow. Then you went to Riverdale. Some people went to Queens. Then you went to the five towns. Isn't this all over the sociological developments of the Jewish community? Same thing in Tel Aviv, Yaffa. South Tel Aviv, they ran. The center, Haram, Rothschild. Then North Tel Aviv, Ramat Aviv today, the university. And the further you move, the less religious you are. Who moves first? A religious Jew? Very hard to move. My shul, my mikveh, my gemara class, my lashon hara group. Very hard to move. But an irreligious Jew, the wide open spaces, let me move. And it's interesting. Notice right away. And this problem has haunted the Mizrahi educational system. Those of you who live here know exactly what I'm saying. The secular high school, Herzliya, Tel Aviv, the wealthy, the cultured, the modern, the successful, the sophisticated, Tachkamoni, Yaffa, poverty, old fashioned, outlandish, outmodish. See the difference? But at least we're going to match them. And from that moment on, the entire history of the Zionist movement is secular Zionism, religious Zionism. Schools, institutions, newspapers, publications. What a story. What a tale. What an achievement. What a battle. What a challenge that is still with us until this moment. But we'll come back to it. I'm far from finished. Let me reiterate, but before I do, let me just announce, first of all, there's an old minhag Yisrael that before Rosh Hashanah, you have to take food from someone else, that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Goy, said that you should lack food, this should be the fulfillment of the Gezerah. So I want to lechabed etchem, please, there's more in my closet. Take for your wives, your children, whatever you want. I want to thank you all for coming to class. That's number one. Number two, what we did today is very important. I try to make you feel the depth of the issues. I don't say they're black and white answers. I'm not a fool. I'm not Haredi. The Haredi world has easy answers to difficult questions. We have difficult questions. They're not easy answers. They're no black and white answers. And I have a lot of Torah on this. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. If you knew the Rav, he was the greatest. You see, I always walk around thankful to the Ribbono Shel Olam that Israelis are a bunch of idiots. Michael, do you know what I just said? You're a wise man. I said something very deep. In 1935, the Rav stood for the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. Imagine had the Israelis been wise and elected him. I'm lucky you weren't there. Wise men were not there. Because they didn't elect him, a little dummy like myself could get on the 36 bus on Washington Avenue. It took 20 minutes, get off in Washington Heights, walk up Amsterdam Avenue, 5-6 blocks, and there I was, room 102, sitting next, as I explained, sitting next to Tova Lichtenstein, and sitting right in front of the Rav. And the Rav, you see, as a kid, you only saw him, you were limited in your comprehension of him. But over the decades, first of all, we had a very close personal relationship, but It's more than that. Listening to him, and I got to understand him a million times better. Jewish observer, you understand, could never comprehend this. A Rebbe saying it's very complex and we don't have a black and white answer. What do you mean? That goes against the whole Haredi world. We have black and white answers. We march. We know what to do. Das Torah. No, it's much, life is much more difficult and complex. But this is an issue that hangs fire. We struggle with it. Thank God we've been successful. We've gotten there. And I can only tell you, the Mizrahi conquered the world, as I will explain. But at this point in history, these were brave decisions. Tit for tat, we're going to march them, match them. You organize. You do, we do. And Rabbi Reines was the founder. But with all said and done, it was a struggling institution. Next week, Bezrat Hashem, will see what put Mizrahi on the map. Now, next week, there's no class Sunday, but there is a class Monday, our final Sunday at Tzom Gedalia. It's a Nidche, but it's Tzom Gedalia. And our final class until after Sukkot is this coming Monday, a week from now. And I believe after Sukkot, if I'm not mistaken, we pick up again on Monday. In other words, Sunday there is no school. Yom Tov ends Thursday, then Friday is a break, then Shabbos is Shabbos, and I guess people will be away. If I'm not mistaken, check with Rabbi Bednash. But if I read the schedule correctly, there is no school Sunday, and Monday we pick up again. So for 2 weeks, we'll miss the Sunday class. I'll put up a notice, but this is as I understand it. Now, this is something very fascinating. This is a review of Rabbi Hartman's new book. And I have to tell you, it's very aggravating. But it's a review, actually. It's dealing with Torah HaMelech, but he gets involved, and I saw the book. And Rabbi Hartman accuses the Rav of freezing the halacha, theology, habalach, permanence, for freezing Jewish law permanently and uniformly in place, ignoring the passing of time, neglecting the shifting of culture. And I have to say, it's beyond words. This is literally conservative Judaism, not even right-wing. I don't know if this is centrist. It sounds to me like left-wing. But if anyone's interested, I have the original copy and the other copy. I saw the book and I was hard to believe. But all right, that's Al Tamim B'Asmacha Yom Mutcha. That's the Lakewood boy, Chaim Berlin boy. Then he came to the Rav. Michael, this is for you and for Yitz. This is a picture of the prayer for the Russian government in the synagogues under the communists. Did anyone else see go to Russia? Anyone else go to Russia? Because I made more copies. If anyone wants, they're welcome to it. The Mossad asked me for this. I don't know, no one else evidently photographed it. It's now a relic. Michael, this is for Yitzhak. Okay, pass this on. Finally, I just want to mention, this is very fascinating. I would love to see the Sefer, Labriot. A Rav Chaim Avraham Zakatunsky, if I'm pronouncing his last name right, is publishing a Sefer with all the shilas of Kiruv Rechokim. If you recall, the Eish Kodesh rabbi, my student rabbi, Moshe Weinberger, many years ago, published a Sefer in English, Tav put it out, dealing with the shilas of Kiruv Rechokim, of Shabbos, inviting people to a meal on Shabbos, kids who become from whose homes are not kosher, what they can eat, what they can't eat, all the shilas that you can imagine. And here I take a look in this book, which is called Umakarev B'Yamin. He's dealing with in Yanin B'Sheilot Shemitorot Eitzel Eilu Shoskim B'Kiruv Rechokim. and he's dealing with giving him a Chalal Shabbos and Aliyah. He's dealing with civil marriage. What's the status of the kid from a second marriage when his mother never got a get in between, but she was married by a civilly or reformed rabbi? Keep it up, the yang, when your parents are not religious. All the fascinating Shayla. So I would love to see the Sefer. If it comes out, let me know. If anyone wants the photograph here of the index of the Sefer and what is planned, you're welcome to it. And finally, once again, I have one more copy of the Shkia and Yitziat Shabbat, Hadlakat Neirat Yeshia and Yitziat Shabbat for Yerushalayim HaKodesh. I want to read one other thing. Does this kippah belong to anyone? Someone lost the kippah and it has not been claimed. It's been decorating this room for about 3 weeks now. Finally, I want to remind you, please take some candy, and I want to wish everyone a k'tiva b'chatima tova l'shnat chayim osha with an ayin, shalom, a year of peace, spiritual peace, physical peace, temporal peace, for cult of Sela, and it should be Olenu v'al kol Yisrael. Thank you very, very much. To see you after the new year. Das v'danya. Ah, I survived 3 days.